This summer, we spoke with poet and author Kwame Alexander about his wildly successful book, The Crossover. When he visited a middle school, we saw his impact on kids.
That was icy cold.
You're Kwame Alexander?
Kwame Alexander? I read your book, The Crossover.
So, Kwame is a rock star. His latest book, co-written with Mary Rand Hess, is the story of Blade, a high school senior in L.A. from a family of rock and roll royalty. Sounds great, but think Ozzy Osbourne at his worst. The family crown is tarnished, Blade's dad washed up and addicted, Blade mortified, and there's a family secret. Now, all kids are trying to find their identities. Blade has to do that with his wacky but loving Ozzy Osbourne-like dad in a village in Ghana. Kwame Alexander joins us. And we understand the seed for your story was planted when you visited Ghana with Juanita Britton, the African-American entrepreneur. She was made the queen of a village in Ghana?
Yes. Yes. She was made the queen mother of a village called Timber in Kwanta. And well, that's how I ended up in Ghana.
Well, you fall in love with this village, and we're going to link people to what came of it. You built a library there. You started literacy organizations. But the village then factors in to your story. But we start in L.A. So who is Blade Morrison? He writes in his, you know, kind of typically morose teenage writing, you know, how does it feel to be the son and daughter of a fallen rock star? Tell us more about this teenager.
Blade Morrison is the son of a poor, rich man, and he's trying to find himself amidst these first world problems that he has. His father's a rock star. You know, he comes from this wealthy family. He's got everything going for him. He's headed to a great four-year university. He's having issues in his life amidst all of these, my agent calls them champagne problems. But the issues are issues that all kids kind of deal with. Who am I? What is my place in this world? Who's going to love me? Who am I going to love? And what happens to a 17-year-old kid when your family just, you know, as my daughter, when she was a teenager, used to say, starts kirking off? Your family just doesn't get it. They're crazy, or at least that's how you view them.
Right.
All these things sort of come crashing down on him at the same time.
And there's also a heavy dose of something that's very typical at this age as well. How did I get in this family? I don't belong in this family. And here we come to another truth about Blade. Now, I normally don't give plot points away in a book, but I really...
Spoiler.
Yeah, spoiler. So if you don't want to hear, if you're already like, I'm getting that book and I don't want to know anymore, I want to have it unfold for me. But Kwame, I want people to know what a great book this is about teens, but also what a great book it is about adoption, mixed race kids in white families, because that's the family secret, that Blade's skin is darker and his hair is curlier because he was adopted. And now he's on a journey to find, really, truly find his identity and to find his black biological mother who's moved to Africa, which brings Blade and his wacky father and you, because you're there too, because you went to Ghana. Tell us more about that finding identity part of this.
You know, I've been to Ghana 5 times, and this place is rich in love. It's rich in humility. It's rich in kindness and caring. And I got to write a lot of that from personal experience because I spent time, you know, trying to walk with a bucket of water on my head. Watching the smiles of these 200 children that I met in the village of Konko, you know, Nikki Giovanni has a poem where she says, someday somebody's going to write a poem about how poor I was and not know how happy I was all the time. So I saw this joy in these children's eyes, and it just lit me up amidst all of the poverty that they're dealing with. And I said, I got to write about that. And so Blade is on a journey to find his family, to find himself, and that journey takes him to Ghana.
Everything comes alive. He comes alive. This place comes alive. Did you really see a sign near a small lake that read, no drowning?
Yes. It exists. It's you stop at a traffic light or you get to an intersection. There are people who are selling everything from coat hangers to sunglasses to plantain chips, anything you could possibly need.
And also a lot of wisdom. One of the things Blade hears from a new friend is, Blade, you cannot build a house for last year's summer, telling him to maybe also forgive his father, not just his birth mother. How did you know so much about, you know, the feelings of someone who's been adopted?
You know, I get that kind of question a lot. I tend to think that, Robin, people laugh, smile, love, hurt, cry pretty much the same. Mm. You know, what Blaze dealing with, I dealt with when I was 17 years old, trying to figure out what's next, feeling jilted. I remember going to my girlfriend's, or who I thought was my girlfriend's house, and my best friend opening her door. And that totally just destroyed my world. That's a real thing, regardless of whether you're black or white or whether you live in Shanghai or in Southeast D.C. Right. That feeling of being jilted is real. As it relates to Blade being adopted, I think, Robin, that when the writing gets good, when you really get into the rhythm of it, when you're really being true to the character, the truths are revealed.
And by the way, we should say it's not all neat and tidy. I mean, this is a to-be-continued kind of book as people try to make their way through their discoveries. But I want to talk for a second about the music. Blade is also a musician. He's a songwriter. It's kind of sappy, but, you know, perfect, perfect.
You called him sappy.
Well,
he is in high school.
Your eyes, they mesmerize me. Yes, your eyes hypnotize me, your eyes.
So, yeah, the music played such an integral role in creating this novel in verse. When we got down to recording the audiobook, I knew that we needed to sort of bring the lyrics off the page and bring them onto the stage. So my buddy Randy Preston, we went into a studio in Nashville and recorded some of these songs. And I know on paper, Robin, they may look a little cheesy.
No, they look teenagey.
They're teenagers. Yeah. Exactly. But when you hear them, Robin, they come alive, and it makes you feel like, you know, you're not riding solo anymore. You know, music is a way to connect us all.
Well, your book has the lyrics, but the audiobook has the song, so let's listen.
Excuse me, I mean, what did you say? I'm sorry, just a little blown away. Cause your eyes,
but he also refers to all the music that is the soundtrack of his life. Bob Dylan's I Was Young When I Left Home, Tina Turner, Bryan Adams, Fleetwood Mac's Landslide. Really interesting, because this is a kid in L.A. in recent times, and Blade's kind of a throwback kid. But you've told us that you were inspired by that scene in Say Anything when John Cusack holds up the boombox and plays Peter Gabriel's In Your Eyes. Let's listen. It's always great to hear it again. Let's listen.
Sometimes.
Talk about the music, because it's obviously you're so marinated in it.
Yeah, well, I grew up listening to a lot of gospel music. My father was a Baptist minister, and so there wasn't a whole lot of secular music in the house until I got to high school and discovered Prince and Michael Jackson and The Police and Genesis, and rock and roll, 80s rock became the music that sort of was the soundtrack to my life, to the lives of my friends. You know, we played tennis listening to I Wear My Sunglasses at Night, Under the Lights, 10 o'clock at night. So this music became the music that defined us, that made us feel cool. And I knew I wanted to pay a tribute to that music.
So obviously music, the soundtrack of your life, and you make it the soundtrack of Blade's, and he knows every detail. And he sets up certain experiences in his life by citing a song. In this case, we want to hear when he was having to write a song for his upcoming high school graduation. Would you read that?
Track 1, Thinking of You, rocker Lenny Kravitz, album 5, label Virgin America, recording date 1998, studio Compass Point Studios in the Bahamas. While we're writing the song that I'm to play in less than 9 hours in front of 3,000 people, the song that I've decided to dedicate to my mom, Uncle Stevie plays some Lenny for inspiration, then explains that most people only know that Lenny wrote it about his mother, but no one knows that she was an actress on a sitcom called The Jeffersons, or that one of his bandmates actually played Heineken bottles on the track, which would be a pretty cool story if I hadn't heard him tell it a million times. My dad jets for the pool and a cig because the song makes him think of her.
Hmm.
So, yeah, the way I ended up coming up with this idea to write these poems I call track poems, where I take a song and give you the story behind it while still moving the story of Blade along. I was in a bookstore in Radnor, Pennsylvania, a small independent bookstore, and Dylan had just won, I believe, the Nobel Prize, and I saw this huge book, 1,500 pages, and it's like $100, and it was every Dylan song and the story behind each of the songs, from where he recorded it, who he was with, what he meant by this particular lyric, and I was immersed in it, and felt like, okay, I knew a little bit more about him because I knew a little bit more about why he wrote these songs. And I knew that was going to play a role in this book, in Solo, to help us further understand, you know, what makes Blade tick.
The book is Solo. When the Heart Gets Lost, Let the Music Find You. From Kwame Alexander, his latest for teens. Kwame, it's terrific. Thank you so much for talking to us about it.
Thank you so much, Robin.